Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. The likelihood of Florida man Donald Trump being indicted soon has the state's political world on edge. Governor Ron DeSantis weighs in on the Trump prosecution, and major bills are moving quickly through the legislature, including a six-week abortion ban. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, gentlemen, we've had a little bit of time off here as we take some hard-earned vacation leave. So you've had plenty of time to come up with some numbers. What do you have for us, John?
Zach, I'm here with a simple number 37.
All right, 37 for John Kennedy. What about you, Antonio?
Well, mine is related to my week off, and it's 4,403.
4,403. Good to have you back. We'll be interested in finding out what that number is at the end of the show. My number is 29 million. I'm the high man today. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics a little bit later. Well, Donald Trump's legal woes are reaching a fever pitch as the Manhattan district attorney appears poised to indict the former president on charges related to alleged hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels during the 2016 election. Many Republicans are rallying around the former president, calling his legal jeopardy a political prosecution. Trump has been urging his supporters to protest if an indictment is handed down. It all has overtones of January 6th when election protests spilled over into violence at the U.S. Capitol. Antonio, what's the mood like on the ground in Palm Beach where Trump is holed up in Mar-a-Lago?
Well, Zach, you know, it's really intriguing. You know, you're right that Republicans across the board have come out to defend Trump in lockstep, almost to the point of repeating the same talking points. But on the ground here, the grassroots reaction has been far more muted. Let me sort out the context here. Remember, Palm Beach County is Trump's home county. It is the cradle of the Trump phenomena, or to his critics, the cult of personality. This is the place where, during his presidency, hundreds and hundreds of Trump followers would congregate on the roadway leading to Mar-a-Lago, which was then known as the Southern White House, and to pay homage to Trump. Mar-a-Lago was also on the Intracoastal Waterway, so this is a place where you had these Trump boat parades that became a familiar sight, and where Trump highway rallies with lots of vehicles with Trump flags would periodically be parading.
It's sort of developed into this sort of ritualistic thing, right? Where you have these routines and these people who are sort of frequent flyers who are here all the time in the same spots. It just seems like they would really be the first ones to respond, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they were. And in fact, this place of allegiance continued after Trump left the White House. For example, you know, that on that January 20th, 2021, when he came back at the end of his presidency, I mean, there were at least 1,000 people lining up that roadway. A few months later, hundreds came out to celebrate his birthday. But you know, what we've been seeing is a very curious trend in the past year or so. That is, namely, fewer and fewer people congregating. For example, even in the outrage among the Trump faithful that followed the FBI raid for government documents at Mar-a-Lago last summer, we didn't see hundreds of people out there. We saw more like scores of people. Then this past January, on the second anniversary of the January 6th insurrection, we saw just dozens of people out there. And then this weekend, after Trump called for his followers to, quote unquote, protest, 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 well, roughly a dozen people came out. Now, does this mean that Trump has lost his support? I don't think that is the case. I think he still has solid base of support. But it may point to a more nuanced difference, meaning that he has support, but perhaps the fervor that distinguished MAGA politics may have ebbed a bit. You know, it's one thing to say, I support Trump and I'll vote for him to a pollster. But it's another thing to say, you know what, I love Trump so much, I'm going to go out and stand in the hot sun for hours waving a flag to make a point. So, yeah, he has support, but maybe the fervor we saw before, that zealotry, maybe that's just not so evident right now. Now, that could change if he is indicted at some point, so we'll be standing by.
All right. Well, I guess that's good news that there's no signs that Palm Beach is going up in flames if Trump is indicted here. Hopefully that's an indication of what we'll see around the nation. Nobody wants a repeat of January 6th, that's for sure. Well, with Trump poised to be indicted, his supporters are pressuring Republicans to come to his defense. The moment is another inflection point for the GOP that will test how far Republicans will go to support the former president. Governor Ron DeSantis Trump's likely presidential primary opponent is a big target in this pressure campaign, and he finally spoke out this week. DeSantis slammed the prosecutor in Trump's case, but he also made a point of highlighting the sordid allegations against Trump, with a lot of people kind of viewing that as sort of twisting the knife a little bit, as he noted that this all involved payoffs to a porn star, and he wouldn't know anything about that, but he was seemed very eager to highlight kind of the tawdry nature of all this. And DeSantis also said he wouldn't get involved in the case in any way, indicating he won't help Trump fight extradition from Florida if it came to that, which seems unlikely, but there's been a lot of speculation around that. John, DeSantis seemed to be trying to walk a tightrope with this response.
Yeah, the governor is facing a tough balancing act these days. It's basically how to woo the Trump base away from Trump and keep Trump from mocking and ridiculing him for attempting to do just that. And so far, it just doesn't seem possible. With the governor's response to Trump's possible indictment, which came after DeSantis was being called out by Trump and his allies for not responding, not coming to the president's defense, the former president's defense. He seems to have gotten himself into even more trouble because he clearly tried to sideswipe the former president with his remarks. He did join in with the Trump chorus that's disparaging the New York prosecutor. But by speculating that this was all about hush money payments to a porn star, well, that just lit Trump's orange hair on fire. And since then, we've seen Steve Bannon and Mike Lindell, Trump's Cerberus-like attack dogs, they've been blistering DeSantis. And DeSantis continues to try to navigate this course of being Trump-like, but not Trump. He says he's got none of the drama or evidently the porn star connections, and he's a competent cultural warrior. But if he continues to antagonize Trump and big sections of diehard Trump supporters, you start wondering, who he's going to have left. I guess he's hoping that he can attract those many Republicans wary of Trump running again. But like we've seen throughout the Trump era, those Trump critics don't like to come out of hiding. So DeSantis, we've seen him, he's already stumbled with his first foray into an international affairs, where he described the Russian invasion of Ukraine as a quote, territorial dispute. Supporting the rights of a democratic free nation shouldn't be hard for someone looking to run for the Republican presidential nomination, you wouldn't think, but DeSantis made it difficult. He has since come back this weekend in an interview, tried to switch things up. Now he's calling Vladimir Putin a war criminal for the invasion of Ukraine. But DeSantis, he did seem to want to share Trump's let's go easy on Russia stance. That's something that has a certain cohort within the Trump base kind of animated right now. But he got railed by so many other slightly more establishment Republicans, and just those that look at it and see the invasion of Ukraine as being totally wrong, and having a Republican presidential nominee who seems to be willing to deal with Russia is a little bit alarming. But anyway, all around for DeSantis, it's starting to look like maybe there's not enough room on Trump Island for him. A Trump who is just not Trump.
Antonio, John sort of hinted that Trump world wasn't too happy with DeSantis's response. The statement that Trump himself put out, man, that was a doozy.
Yeah, he was not. And he's even more unhappy because that's DeSantis has now started to fight back, opting out of his Rose Garden. I'm focused on the legislature strategy. Just this week, the New York Post released an interview DeSantis by TV personality Piers Morgan, in which DeSantis at first swatted back Trump's nicknames and then fired back with his own criticisms of Trump. On the name calling, here's what DeSantis told Morgan, quote unquote, "You can call me whatever you want, just as long as you also call me a winner." Ouch. That's a zinger. There was a reference to DeSantis's nearly 20 percentage point reelection last November, but also looking at the fact that Trump has a pretty much a sagging political record ever going back to the losing the House back in 2018.
Is that going to work, Antonio? I mean, DeSantis, even he is going after Trump, but it's not, he's not hitting him below the belt like Trump likes to hit. Trump's statement after DeSantis kind of twisted the knife a little bit about the Stormy Daniels stuff, and he's saying, I would never know anything about paying hush money to a porn star, and really highlighting the tawdriness of the accusations against Trump. Trump comes back and says, he basically questions DeSantis's sexuality. I don't have the whole statement in front of me, but he says something along the lines of, well, maybe someday Ron will find out about false accusations. And he highlights this article about DeSantis allegedly partying with his students when he was briefly a teacher, and basically implying that, hey, maybe one of them will make an accusation against you someday, and then saying, or maybe it'll come from a man. Right. Stuff like that is pretty wild.
It's pretty wild. And if you look at what Trump world is saying is that's working, because they're citing polls showing a widening gap between Trump and DeSantis. They're saying that, the strategy of really questioning him is working in their favor. So, at what point does DeSantis dig into the mud with Trump? It's hard to tell. But what we do know right now is that basically he is moving in that direction, which should be no surprise to people listening to this podcast. We've been saying that, that DeSantis would start swatting back the nicknames and the name calling because it start pointing more toward his record. And that's what he's been doing. He's also took a shot, though, in that interview with Piers Morgan, basically talking, like you guys mentioned, that there's been no daily drama in my government, which is a shot at the fact that Trump, when he was in the White House, there was a revolving door of drama. He would hire and fire people almost on a daily basis. He also questioned, took a shot at Trump and, his government by social media penchant, and basically saying, I don't really have time for social media. It's not important to me, and it's not accomplishing anything for the people I represent. And, so he's headed in that direction. The question is, like you said, how far will he go and how far will he need to go? At the end of the day, Trump actually yesterday even fired back an even more blistering, two social posts, really attacking, the governor of all things for COVID management, the fact that 86,000 people or so died in this state, the fact that it was third leading in COVID infections. He questioned, crime rates. He cited, supposedly the crime rates in Jacksonville, and also the fact that, Florida has lagged in educational performance, although education and classroom choice and, parents' rights in education have been a big part of DeSantis's record. So, we'll have to see whether, how deep in the mud DeSantis goes against Trump. And a lot of it, will tell as the polls. But I do think, we have been hearing for a long time that people look at Trump and they see all the drama. There are four swirling, potentially criminal investigations of Trump right now. And at some point, people may conclude, as you guys mentioned earlier, that, that he is DeSantis. It has a similar line of policies and rhetoric without the drama, without all of this. And he might be a safer bet against potentially Joe Biden.
Yeah. And, that's kind of what DeSantis is running on, right? Like Trump without the drama, but still very MAGA and very conservative. That's his theory of the case. But Trump continues to drag him down, and his polling numbers have dropped, and Trump has proven that he has really no boundaries, no limits. And, DeSantis's responses to Trump have seemed pretty tepid so far. I think he's hoping that Republicans want him to stay above the fray, but I'm not sure that posture is tenable in the long term. DeSantis is probably looking back at 2016, especially at Marco Rubio, when Trump really just belittled Rubio, and Rubio tried to come back hard at Trump and, kind of had some pretty lewd comments back at him, questioning, his small hands, basically questioning the size of his manhood. and really trying to kind of get down dirty with Trump and respond kind for kind. And it didn't work at all. It just fell flat.
No, I'm going to push back a little bit on that, because I think part of the problem that Rubio had is that he had previously flip-flopped on immigration, on a hardline immigration stance. And that You do not do that with the MAGA crowd. And I think that the party had moved to his right, whereas I think DeSantis does have, and quote unquote, with his MAGA credentials are much more solid than Rubio. And also even Jeb Bush, who was the brother of, you know, the endless wars, you know, warmongering George W. Bush. So I think he's got a little bit more of a shield, but you're right. I mean, we can see the polls. And since Trump went really hard back on the attack on DeSantis, he thinks that the polls have widened. Although, look, man, we're still a year away from more or less from primary. So even the polls, I don't know how much I would trust them. But hey, we'll see.
Yeah, and you're right. Rubio certainly had a lot more baggage with the conservative crowd than DeSantis does. But, you know, Ted Cruz is about as conservative as you get. And Trump humiliated him, lying Ted, you know, made fun of his wife and her appearance and implied that his dad was involved in the JFK assassination, all this stuff. You know, he just throws mud at the wall and sees what sticks. And it worked against Cruz as well and dragged him down. So I don't know, you know, DeSantis, if Trump is going to, you know, play dirty like this, if he can stay above the fray, he's certainly hoping that he can to some degree. But he seems to be sort of dipping his feet in the water gingerly when it comes to attacking Trump. We'll see, you know, how deep he gets in. Well, DeSantis was forced to weigh in on Trump this week, but he'd much rather be talking about his legislative agenda, which he hopes to showcase in a presidential campaign. Republicans are advancing an array of extremely conservative proposals through the legislature, including a 6-week abortion ban, which passed its first committee this week. John, we're just 2 weeks into the legislative session, but it seems like a lot of big bills are moving very quickly, from that abortion legislation to guns to school culture war proposals. Is this the most aggressive start that you've seen to a legislative session in Florida?
Well, Zach, you know, I've seen a few legislative sessions, but sure. But you're right. This one is wall to wall when it comes to provocative legislation making its way forward. And almost all of it is going to be passed by the super majorities that Republicans hold in the House and Senate. And much of it is DeSantis's agenda. But, you know, along with the busy pace and the steady stream of big bills, another thing that's notable about this session is kind of the top down quality of what's going on. Bills limiting abortion rights, cracking down on immigrants, restricting transgender treatment and counseling, limiting the autonomy of the university system and its professors. They're all going through committees with very little comment from Republican lawmakers who ultimately vote in support of these DeSantis-driven initiatives. Basically, committee hearings have become venues where the only comments come from the dozens of opponents to these bills. Republicans who dominate each committee, they're mostly silent, and then they vote for the change. And that change is usually one sought by DeSantis. Those of us who've covered a lot of sessions, and I've seen more than three decades worth, well, we all complained in earlier years about how the legislature had become so top down, where the House Speaker and Senate President basically set the agenda, and the rank and file legislators are really just expected to vote their party line. But this year, it seems like the top down system has really left the House and Senate chambers, and instead the directions are coming from the first floor of the Capitol, where the governor's office is. It's all about advancing policies that are going to bring DeSantis presidential quality attention and presidential quality donations. Everybody else is just here for the ride. And that's something, too, that I've never quite seen before at the Florida Capitol.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's just been full throttle from the beginning here. One of the most conservative legislative sessions in history, for sure. We'll see how it works for DeSantis on the campaign trail. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, I had 4,403, and that is as in the distance from Tallahassee to Madrid, Spain. That would be 4,403 miles. But here's the thing. Politically, we are way closer than that. And I got a look at that while I was visiting the Iberian country earlier this month. Let me explain. Just like in America, MAGA-type politics, which, you know, anti-immigration, protectionism, angry, They've been flourishing in Europe for the past decade. You had Brexit in England with Boris Johnson and the Marie Le Pen's challenge in France, and even a far-right government now in Hungary. In Spain, which has not long ago passed with fascism, the far-right party called Vox has been at a standstill despite getting support from Trump cohort Steve Bannon, who fashions himself as a right-wing Che Guevara. But even today, even after a decade, Vox has won very few mayorships across Spain, and just this week suffered a big defeat in the National Congress. But wait, because now a far-right political figure has actually broken through on the scene. But not from the Vox party, but instead from the ranks of the mainstream conservative Popular Party. She is Isabel Díaz Ayuso, and she's a 44-year-old leader of the Greater Madrid government, which is a very high-profile post. Now, my family in Spain, which watches politics really closely, described her as a Trumpista, basically a mini Trump. But let me tell you a little bit about her, and you tell me who really she sounds more like. First one is a quote she told an investor conference that she wants Spain economically to be, quote unquote, the Florida of Europe. She also said the biggest challenge facing Spaniards is the woke movement, which she said is a real problem in Spain because they are authoritarian. Lately, Ayuso has also been attacking transgender policies, including one in Scotland. And by the way, her rise to power in Madrid was due to her opposition to Spain and Europe's COVID restrictions. She ran on, quote unquote, a freedom campaign and said, "We became allies of the caterers, of the shops, the museums, and increasingly all of society." And once in charge, she opened up Madrid, which got the capital city's economy going, but critics said resulted in needless deaths. In fact, when I landed in Madrid and out of courtesy put on a mask in the taxi, the driver told me, "Oh, no, hey, you don't have to put on that mask because we got rid of those decrees and we got rid of all those rules already." Yes, Ayuso really sounds a lot more like Ron DeSantis than Donald Trump. And I even told my family, "You got it wrong. It's not Trumpismo, it's DeSantismo." That DeSantis isn't just rivaling Trump in Florida or in the United States. His brand of politics is also catching on across the pond in Western Europe.
That's really fascinating, Antonio. The Florida of Europe. Wow. That's amazing. That really shows his resonance. That's why you listen to this podcast, folks. You don't just get Florida politics. You get global politics here. How about you, John? What's your number?
Well, Zach, I can't be as international as Antonio right now, but you know, the legislature here in Tallahassee is about to move in next week into the serious portion of putting together a state budget for next year. And my number 37 is the number of states that are reporting record rainy day or reserve funds, and Florida's among them. Governor Ron DeSantis, in his budget recommendation, which is only that, a recommendation to the legislature, while his $114.8 billion proposal, well, that includes $15.7 billion in reserves. That's a lot of money. But, you know, it's a good thing. But the thing to remember is Florida is not alone, and 36 other states are also brimming with dollars right now. This is according to Pew Trust's research. I bring it up, though, really just to throw maybe a little shade on DeSantis's frequent proclamation that Florida has an exceptionally vibrant and good economy thanks to him. Well, most states are doing it right now, it seems like, and Florida included. Pew concludes that the high level of reserves that most states are enjoying is really rooted in budgets being helped by higher than forecasted tax collections and the availability of flexible federal pandemic aid, which helped states significantly over the past 3 years and is only now kind of starting to fade. So Democratic President Joe Biden and what had been a Democratic Congress until last November, well, they get some credit for the solid ground that the states are standing on, but that's something you're not going to hear from Governor DeSantis, who rails more about how the spending has caused what he likes to call Bidenflation. Well, you know, like a lot of things we're hearing about Florida from the Republican governor as he readies for this presidential run, it's important to kind of separate the myth-making from the reality. And Florida's go-go economy is real, but it's also maybe not the exception that DeSantis makes it sound. There are a lot of states that are economically good right now. And maybe with all the banking woes, the international conflict, and inflation facing us, that's something to be cheerful about as we in Tallahassee start to begin our seasonal wrangling with budget talks.
All right. Well, I also have a budget-related number for everybody today. My number is $29 million. That's how much New College of Florida stands to lose from donors who are canceling their planned gifts after Governor Ron DeSantis led a conservative takeover of the college. For those of you who aren't following this story as closely as I am, New College is DeSantis's experiment and conservative higher education reform. He replaced the college's board with conservative ideologues and is trying to transform the school into Florida's version of Hillsdale College, a conservative Christian school in Michigan that has close ties to DeSantis and Trump. DeSantis has claimed that he is saving the school, which has struggled with low enrollment. He has committed an extra $15 million in state taxpayer money to New College and has promised more money from the taxpayers will flow into the school as his appointees enact their conservative reforms. But the fact that donors are now fleeing the school shows that his actions are having big financial repercussions. The loss of these donors could balance out some of this state money that's flowing into the school. That could be a pretty big deal. The foundation is on the hook to pay a large portion of the salary for New College's new president, Richard Corcoran. As donors flee, can make it difficult to pay Corcoran's salary and put pressure on the foundation to use donor money in ways that they didn't intend. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy, and thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.